This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later this hour, how are you doing on your summer to-do list? Have you been putting things off? I have. We'll find out why we procrastinate and get some advice on getting things done.
First, it's been almost a week since the first Republican primary debate, and enough polls are out there now to get a sense of who the biggest winners and losers were, according to Republican voters.
It's our weekly look at the latest in national politics. Also this week, Black Lives Matter protesters have been showing up at Democratic candidates' events, especially for Bernie Sanders. They interrupted one of his rallies in Seattle this past weekend. We'll take a look at why they're targeting him.
Here with us now is Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time. Hey, Harry.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, doing pretty well, thanks. Now, looking back at the debate about a week ago, just about everybody jumped right in there to declare the winners and losers for that first debate. You hung back. You played it cool. You waited a few days, looked at the polls as they piled up to see who won and lost in public opinion. First of all, why did you wait?
Because debates and who wins them is as much about the media reaction and how the media plays it than voters' initial reactions. If you remember back in 2000, Gore actually was thought of as the winner by most voters after his first debate with George W. Bush. But the media and SNL, Saturday Night Live, got all over him, and the perception of voters began to shift as the further we got out from the debate. And, of course, it's well after the debate that it actually matters what voters think, not what they think initially.
So you've got a whole passel of polls that you looked at, so we're not drawing from just one. So what does that tell you about who people thought did well and not so much for other people?
Sure. The clear winner from this debate was Carly Fiorina, which, of course, is very funny because she wasn't actually part of the prime time debate, the one that started at 9 p.m. She was in what we were calling the junior varsity debate at 5 p.m., but she was able to break through. She had very nice statements to make. She was short. She was crisp. She was perfect for a soundbite. And she just stood above the field at 5 p.m. And if you look at where she was and asked voters who you thought won the debates overall, she even beat people at the 9 p.m. hour. People were talking about her well into the evening and the days afterward. And what we see in the post-debate polls is that she gained on average 6 percentage points, which is far more than anybody else gained. Marco Rubio and Ben Carson, who were in second, only gained on average 2.4 percentage points. So she was far and away the clear winner most people thought she won, and the polls reflect that.
Well, it's an interesting case because she wasn't in that pack of top-tier candidates. She was in the second-tier candidates on at the earlier time slot. Do you think the result would have been the same if she would have been debating the primetime group of people?
I get a feeling we're going to find out if it would have been the same in a month when CNN has its debate, because if she comes anywhere close to holding to the polling number she has now, she'll make it into there. But I think, of course, we grade on a curve. We judge relative to other candidates. And if you look at that 5 p.m. debate, no one was really impressive on that stage besides her, versus I think most people would agree at that 9 p.m. debate, there were a number of people who came across strongly, such as Marco Rubio, such as Ben Carson, and even the people who were sort of weaker, like a Chris Christie or a Rand Paul, certainly put in debate performances that were far and above better than most of the participants in the 5 p.m. debate.
And as far as the people who came out looking less than stellar, people who dropped a little in the polls, who stuck out to you?
It's very clear who the loser was. It's Wisconsin's governor, Scott Walker. He lost ground in every single post-debate poll. He lost on average 4.6 percentage points. A CNN poll that was taken in Iowa that just came out in the past few minutes has him dropping to third place. Remember, it was no more than a month ago, in fact, only probably a few weeks ago, that Walker was the leader and was in Iowa, and he had been leading there for months, at least since February, and now he's dropped all the way to third there and has dropped across the board in New Hampshire as well and nationally. Clearly, voters were just not impressed with what they saw from him on Thursday night.
Well, it's interesting because immediately after the debate, when we talked about Scott Walker's performance, it was that he didn't talk a lot, he didn't use all of his time, but he didn't alienate a lot of people either. So what happened between then and now?
I think what happened was, number one, people spoke so highly of, you know, Fiorina, and Trump, of course, always takes up a ton of media attention. But I think what this really tells us is how flexible voter choices are. Walker has always been well-liked among most Republicans, and that's still the case. He didn't disqualify himself. If you look at his favorable ratings, they're still quite high. But what happened was voters were introduced to alternatives, conservative alternatives, such as Carly Fiorina, and they said, well, you know what, we have some alternatives out there. We're going to at least for now cast our lot with them, and we'll see where we are in a few weeks. But this is more about other candidates picking up name recognition than it probably is anything that Walker did that was particularly poor.
And what about that Trump factor? Obviously, he was a big marquee name going into the debate. Fox News had some questions that were targeting him in terms of whether or not he was going to have a third-party run or not, whether he would rule it out. How did that play out in the debate?
Well, I think most voters, if you look at the polls, most voters did not feel that Trump was the ultimate winner. People either put Fiorina, even though she was in the 5 p.m., someone like Rubio, Cruz, or Marco Rubio, or Ben Carson as the winner. But Trump really didn't seem to hurt himself all that much. If you look at the polls, yes, he lost ground on average, but it sort of split. Some of the polls had him gaining, some of them had him losing. And remember, Trump is still the most well-known of these Republican candidates, and people who aren't paying that close attention to the race tend to gravitate towards the candidate who they know the best, and Trump is that person. So Trump is still leading in most of these contests. He was leading in a poll out from New Hampshire yesterday. He's leading in all of the post-debate Iowa polls. So he's still out in front, even if he is a little bit damaged.
We're talking to Harry Enten right now, senior political writer and analyst for 538. We're getting the latest in national politics right now. And this week, after the debate, there was this flap with Megyn Kelly and Donald Trump. Donald Trump saying the debate wasn't fair, making kind of incendiary comments that got a lot of people pretty upset in different camps, both sides there. Did that hurt his standing?
Well, I think one of the things that we are beginning to see in these post-debate polls, and you saw it a little bit in the pre-debate polls as well, is that there's becoming a gender gap with Trump support. So it had been previous that Trump was basically doing evenly well across the board. This is somewhat surprising if you think of Trump as sort of a Tea Party supporter, but he was doing well with Tea Party supporters, people who didn't support the Tea Party, very conservatives, non-very conservatives, and he was doing the same with men and women. But what we see now is that Trump support among men is at least 5 points higher than it is among women. And I don't think that's by accident. I think that what's probably going on here is that some Republican women are hearing these Trump comments, and they're not exactly liking them very much. And if you look at the favorable ratings for Trump, that's where you see a big disparity, where I believe the Suffolk poll that came out from Iowa yesterday had Trump's net favorability closer to plus 20 with men, while it was only about zero. That is, his favorable and unfavorable ratings were about the same among women. So it's pretty clear that he has hurt himself among women, but at this point he hasn't hurt himself enough that he's lost the lead yet in pretty much any of these polls.
What do we know about who's likely to go to the polls to vote in November, men or women?
Well, we know that if we're talking about a general election, women are more likely to vote than men are. It's a slight difference. You know, it depends on the exact election. It's usually like 52-48. In Republican primaries, it's more towards 50-50, and depending on which one you're looking at, males might be slightly more likely to vote in a Republican primary than women. But they're basically even across the board. So obviously, if you're Trump, you don't want to alienate yourself against at least half of the voting population. And if you're talking about the general election overall, women really don't like Trump, which is part of the reason why he runs the weakest among any of the Republicans in a matchup against Hillary Clinton.
Well, let's talk New Hampshire now. You mentioned that a little bit ago, and last week, or was it earlier this week, rather, you wrote that Bernie Sanders' surge is dying down, you said, but a new poll shows that he's leading now in New Hampshire for the first time. So what's your take on that?
My take is that I should no longer be a writer. No, I think that, you know, this is a great example whereby we have to wait for more polls to come in. Look, Bernie Sanders is from next door in Vermont. He does very well among white liberals. There are a lot of those in New Hampshire. There are a lot of those in Iowa as well, which is why his polling numbers in Iowa tend to run ahead of his national numbers. But this is just one poll. There were a lot of polls taken in July, a lot of polls taken in June. And what my piece was really getting at was if you looked at Bernie Sanders polling in June and July, and you looked at Hillary Clinton's polling in June and July, either nationally in Iowa or New Hampshire, those numbers were fairly steady, or in the case of Iowa, it seemed like Clinton was actually picking up a little bit of ground. And this poll just seems completely out of the blue in the sense that no other poll had Sanders leading, no other poll really had him close to leading, and pretty much all the conversation that I've spoken with other people who watch this stuff or may, you know, have some inside information, it's a real surprise. But again, who knows? It's a primary, things change, things shift. In late September of 1999, Bill Bradley, the liberal alternative, overtook Gore, only to fall back later. So it's just one poll, but it's something we keep an eye on. This is the reason we watch these things and let voters actually decide and choose and don't let analysts like myself tell voters what to do.
And Harry, briefly here as we wrap up, protesters from the Black Lives Matter movement have been showing up, interrupting Democratic rallies, Bernie Sanders in one case, talking with Hillary Clinton in another case. Are they having an impact on the conversation over on the Democratic side?
I think they're absolutely having an impact on the conversation. You know, we're talking a lot more about police tactics, police brutality, and black civil rights overall than I can remember in any recent primary. And more than that, that's part of the reason why someone like Bernie Sanders isn't doing well nationally is because his polling numbers with African Americans remain quite poor relative to Hillary Clinton's. And that's the sort of ace that she has in her back pocket.
Harry, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time for the latest in national politics.